Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst-case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the Great Kanto Earthquake. Here's what you need to know. When Emperor Meiji passed away in 1912, Japan entered its Jazz Age. Known as the Taisho Era, this period in Japanese history invited a mass democratic movement, a boom in industrialization, and a westernized culture. The heartland of Japan, Kanto is a region on the main island Honshu and encompasses the greater Tokyo area. In 1923, Kanto's population had rapidly expanded as factory jobs abounded and Tokyo housed dozens of densely crowded industrial districts. On Saturday, September 1st, 1923, families were gathering around the table for lunch when a segment of the Philippine Oceanic Plate glided against the Eurasian Continental Plate, releasing a catastrophic burst of energy. A magnitude 7.9 earthquake struck Kanto for mere minutes, and it would obliterate the entire region by the late afternoon. Down at the docks of Yokohama, family and friends waved goodbye to their loved ones as a steamship prepared to disembark for Vancouver. A low rumbling gave way to a deafening jolt as the pier collapsed, throwing hundreds of people into the water. A 30-foot tsunami consumed the coast as residents fled toward safety. Then the fires came. At 2 minutes before noon, thousands of families were sitting down for their midday meal. As the earth beneath them violently convulsed, hundreds of komodos, or cooking stoves, overturned. Coupled with the dozens of ruptured gas lines and high winds, firestorms erupted across Tokyo and burned everything in their path. Within minutes, hundreds of fires consumed the city, turning the bustling metropolis into a wasteland of rubble and ash. Thousands of panicked residents congested Tokyo's web of roads, alleys, and bridges as they attempted to flee the thickening smoke. over 38,000 individuals took refuge at the site of the former Hanzhou clothing department. A cyclone filled with superheated air and fire trapped and killed nearly everyone who had sought shelter there. One of the few survivors recalled, an enormous wall of fire like a tidal wave turned the air as hot as melting rock. In the poorer neighborhoods north of Yokohama, the shockwaves collapsed entire neighborhoods built on unstable ground within seconds. The quake destroyed the water mains, paralyzing the fire departments as fires ignited hundreds of flimsy wood homes. By the late afternoon, rumors were spreading almost as quickly as the fires that Korean residents, a largely working-class group, were setting the fires, looting collapsed buildings, and provoking further violence throughout the city. The day following the devastating earthquake, as hundreds of thousands of survivors struggled to find food, water, and shelter, police officers began dragging Koreans into the streets, shouting, "When you see a Korean behaving violently, you may beat him to death then and there." Vigilante mobs wielding spears, knives, and broken glass, and organized Japanese police and military officers killed thousands of Koreans, Japanese socialists, and other marginalized dissidents in the 3 weeks following the cataclysmic earthquake that had already ravaged the cities. Fun facts, aka death stats. According to survivors, the initial quake lasted for about 14 seconds. The entire earthquake lasted about 4 to 10 minutes and was equal to the detonation of 400 Hiroshima-sized atomic bombs. 48% of all homes in Tokyo were either destroyed or classified as uninhabitable. Nearly 7,000 factories, 162 hospitals, and 117 out of Tokyo's 196 primary schools were destroyed. 33.4 million square meters of Tokyo were turned into ash and rubble. 2.5 million people were left homeless, and over 100,000 people died, with the fatalities ranging from 105,000 to 142,000. An estimated 6,000 Koreans were killed in Tokyo and Kanagawa. More Japanese died as a result of the Great Kanto earthquake than perished as a result of the Sino-Japanese War of 1894 to 95, the Russo-Japanese War of 1904 to 1905, and the First World War combined. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guest today is one of my dearest friends. She's an actor. She's also the creator, producer, star of the second season of the upcoming podcast, It Makes a Sound, Jacqueline Landgraf.
Hello. Good morrow.
Jacqueline, tell our listeners about It Makes a Sound. We're so excited for the second season because, spoiler alert, many reasons.
Spoiler alert, starring Rebecca Delgado.
It's not starring. It's not starring.
It is starring. Well,
Rebecca's nice excited. Cameos.
Greatly featured. No, not cameo. Featured. Featured role. Thanks, Rebecca. Well, It Makes a Sound is a podcast, but it's not like an alarmist podcast. It's a fiction podcast. It is a quirky musical comedy about a woman who has returned home to her decrepit golf course community to care for her mother, who has dementia. And she makes an incredible discovery. She finds a cassette tape from 1992 in the attic that contains the only known recording of the concert of former resident and musical genius Wim Pharos. But for various reasons, she can't play the tape. So what ensues is kind of her zealous attempt to revive what she thinks is the sound of a generation entirely from memory. And in that journey, she and her mother accidentally find themselves fronting a wildly avant-garde, multi-generational band. And to their great surprise and somewhat dismay, they end up garnering an international fandom.
So the new NSYNC.
Yeah, yeah. So they're the new NSYNC. And the second season, the second season is full of new adventures and new characters, including our everyone's soon-to-be favorite nursing home nurse, played by Rebecca Delgado Smith,
as
a very plucky, fun, meddlesome nurse who really helps everybody out.
You can just hear it in my tone. I was born to play nursing home.
typecast.
Well, we're very excited for season two. And Jacqueline, you know, we like to start our show by asking our guests, what is something that is recently alarming you? What is something that's keeping you up at night?
Oh, geez. Well, now earthquakes.
Yeah. That'll do it. This one will really do it.
We're definitely going to have one today. And also, let's see, war, bigotry, hate crimes, impending death.
The big three.
Our parents' illness.
Yeah, our parents' illness. You know, that's one we haven't talked about as often.
Oh, wow. Well.
But I definitely think about that one as well.
Definitely. Worried about that's what I'd say I'm worried most about that.
Oh, interesting.
In many ways, yeah. I mean, and also, you know, so many other things. Underemployment. I had a cricket infestation lately. Like, that was really keeping me up at
night. We've had that too.
Yeah.
So you know you can eat them.
Yes. Yeah. With chocolate.
Threaten to dip them in chocolate and they'll skedaddle.
Yeah, start taking out boxes of chocolate and you just get the hint.
Is that it? You just verbally threaten them?
Yeah, I say I'm going to eat you.
could be an opportunity. You know?
Yeah, Jiminy.
Yeah.
Well,
there's your new job.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Cricket lurer. That would be like such a good LA job, you know? It's like writer, cricket lure.
Hey, I've done a few comedy sets and I've been a real cricket lure.
We'll have Molly put the cricket sound effect in right there.
Yeah. We have to talk about earthquakes. As much as I do want to talk about all of our parents' illnesses
we'll
and the fears
those
of those. Earthquakes. This is the kind of episode that will, I don't know about you guys, but make me spiral. And I've spent many a nights not only just reading about this, but then doing my own research about what to do if you're in an earthquake. Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. Did you guys listen to that Big Ones?
Yeah, the Big One. Misha Yusuf's podcast. Yeah. But I also was recalling this morning, is it you? Are you and Chris going to meet at Dodger Stadium? Is that what your plan is?
No, we're meeting at the Rose Bowl.
Oh, the Rose Bowl. That's what I meant. The Rose Bowl. That's right.
Yes.
If anyone else out there wants to meet us at the Rose Bowl, if God forbid there's ever a catastrophic earthquake, we'll probably
This is only if you guys are apart.
Apart.
You're not
going
to leave your house and then go to the Rose Bowl.
And let me explain.
I'm running right out the front door. I'm leaving her and the dogs behind.
Meet me at the Rose Bowl.
Sprinting to the Rose
Bowl.
Great
flea market there.
Yeah. No, I'll explain to our listeners. You know, one of the things they say is in case of an earthquake, you should have a meetup plan with your loved ones because, God forbid, you're not together and, God forbid, the roads, you know, are broken. Mm-hmm. What else do you call that? Broken.
Right. No internet.
Drive on the roads. No internet. No phone. Mm-hmm. You should not only have a map in your car that is not a Google map, so like a literal paper map, old school style, in your car so that you know how to get either back home or wherever you're going. But you should have a meetup plan so that I don't know, you can all gather and then take it from there.
I don't have that. And I don't know any of your phone numbers. I don't know my boyfriend's phone number by heart.
Yeah.
I'm effed. I'm yeah. so effed.
You give a phone number?
Today's the day you learn your boyfriend's phone number.
Well,
yeah, I know.
I moved here right before the pandemic, and I feel like this was like an exotic, you know, new worry and fear, the earthquake fear. I'd never been in an earthquake, you know, and so I remember I was staying at like at various houses, including yours, all of yours. And I remember having a period of time where I was just memorizing everybody's phone number, and now I've unmemorized
Now you forgot
them.
It?
Yeah.
You get complacent, and that's the whole point of earthquakes. That's why I feel like they have to remind us is like you need to have a plan because it will come when you least expect it.
Like right
another
now.
Hot tip.
So this is our PSA.
Yes, and another hot tip that I recommend: always have sneakers in your car, in the trunk of your car. God forbid the roads are broken and you have to walk for miles. You don't want to be caught in those wedges or. This is for more for women, I guess.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in the heel in your heels having to walk like, you know, 10 miles back home. Oh. So
it's true. Guys wear uncomfortable shoes too sometimes. So I think I might throw a pair of sneakers out into the in the trunk.
I'm sure more of this will come up as we continue to talk about this tragedy that I mean, this big earthquake. I mean, it is one of the biggest ones. I know.
It really is. And looking at some of the pictures is just deeply, deeply disturbing and shocking.
The first thing that kind of came up is God.
Wow.
Well, yeah. I mean, God punishing the people of Kato for their new Western values. Right.
Well, this is according to J. Charles Shenking, historian of Japan, in the aftermath of the 1923 calamity, numerous commentators and average Tokyoites asked a simple question: why? Why had the disaster struck? Why did areas of Tokyo known as the entertainment districts, consumer districts, and slum areas bear the brunt of the destruction? Was there a meaning behind the calamity? More than a few individuals believed so. Many described the disaster as an act of heavenly punishment or divine warning. Reflecting on this trend in society, Shiteno Nobutaka wrote in the Home Ministry Journal that the divine punishment theory was felt acutely across society immediately following the catastrophe. A lot of self-reflecting, I guess, happened. I mean, we'll get to all the things that happened in the aftermath of the earthquake because it just, sadly, it wasn't even just destruction. There were so many social and political,
racial,
you know, secondary tragedies, you know, that came out of this earthquake. But it seemed like when things like this happen that are so catastrophic, as a humankind, we tend to need explanation. We can't just say, well, this is what happens. Earthquakes happen because we live on Earth and plate tectonics and, you know, everything. Mm-hmm. It's hard for us to really fathom the magnitude of it, I think.
I wonder how much of it, you know, it's cultural too, like that it's 1923, it's Japan, like what in their culture would like want to have some kind of explanation that's divine rather than just dealing with like the science of it?
Yeah, I wonder, Chris, maybe you can look this up, like what was the religious majority, I guess, in Japan in the 20s?
I mean, it's that like really interesting moment that across the world, right? That's like the in-between times between the world wars, and so much shifted. You know, there was like such a shift of consciousness, such a shift of politics. And I feel like, you know, it's like in Berlin and Germany, it was the Weimar Republic in this moment, you know, in Russia, it's like the Bolshevik Revolution had just happened. And so there was this huge wave of like liberalism and, you know, kind of this new form of Marxism. And there was kind of historically a very open, liberal, you know, this is like
party.
Not my word for it, but like a decadent.
We've
party.
All read The Great Gatsby, I hope.
Well, yeah. Have you heard of that book? It's just came out. And so, it, you know, it's like these especially like Japan, and it's like they were a victor of the war, you know? And then this happened, which seems like it played a huge influence in like what came next and why they like switched over from like being the Allied powers into being part of the Axis powers in the Second World War.
Yeah. Go on, Chris. No, I think you got some info.
They expanded their power. No, they just, you know, like Jacqueline just summarized pretty well, actually. I mean, they were, and economically, they were doing really, really well, too. They were adopting sort of the industrial trend that we kind of kicked off in the mid-1800s, and they were just expanding. And I think part of the reaction to the earthquake was like, should we feel bad about this? Because as the population grew, people were doing well financially. I just think, you know, there is something to that where it's like, are we too greedy? Are we being greedy? Is God angry at us for our...
Well, let's talk about greed. Let's talk about capitalism and consumerism. Put that up on the board.
Should always be on the board.
Again, this is J. Charles Schenking. Yeah, if Clayton has it, it would be number one every single time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Capitalism.
Big C.
Schenking, a historian of Japan, said, "The great Kanto earthquake occurred within the turbulent socio-political and economic environment that followed World War I. It was a reflective time during which many commentators in Japan believed society was experiencing a period of moral decay and social dislocation that manifested itself most prominently in Tokyo." Yamada Yoshio, professor of philology and literature at Tohoku University, wrote that this was a disaster they, the people of Japan, had brought on themselves. Some Japanese, such as General Ugaki Kazushige, suggested that Japan had become too materialistic, consumer-oriented, and capitalistic since the end of the Russo-Japanese War in 1905. Tenrikyu priest Okutani Fumitomo suggested that the gods had destroyed the consumer areas of the Ginza and Nihonbashi, where crowds had flocked to satisfy their vanity, as an awakening call to encourage Tokyoites to end their slavish devotion to luxury-oriented consumerism. The destruction of the Mitsukoshi department store was often highlighted as a sign of heaven's displeasure with increasing consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
Economists pointed out that it was not just the consumer areas that had been destroyed, but also the entertainment districts such as Asakusa. In Asakusa, many commentators suggested people wasted time and money in hedonistic, frivolous, and idle pursuits.
Yeah, stores. That's tough. I mean, like, we were like, right, it seems that God really struck down this massive department store.
Right.
And, like, the entertainment industry and all the movie. Like, it's like this one particular island that was representative of, you know, a lot of the new kind of Western, like, consumer culture. And then it's like, goodbye. Like, here's an earthquake, a tsunami, a cyclone, like a dragon twist, a fire, like riots.
We're just going to take it all out.
Bridge collapse.
That's out.
Yeah. Like, in case I didn't make myself clear.
Yeah. If you're looking for a sign, that's a big one.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. It shows that the society at the time, maybe this is a cultural thing in Japan, was, self-reflective in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or at least there was this push among, I guess, its community leaders or religious leaders at the time who were, you know, sort of forcing that kind of perspective. But it makes you think about, you know, when tragedy strikes, how people respond. I do think that in our country, we have a very sort of, you know, we like to, I guess, rebound and say, you know,
we're going
to
get back out there.
We're going to get back out there, pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and just rebuild.
I think that that's what they were doing or later on decided to do. But I do agree. I think that at the moment, you know, when it all happened, it was very reflective. And I wonder if that's because it was in between these periods of war, you know, as they say, when hardship is happening in the world, when there are wars, people go back to reboots and musicals.
because they don't have the bandwidth also to think about new concepts, new ideas. They want comfort. Right. It's like when bad things happen in my life personally, I want to watch the Great British Baking Show. That's all I can handle. Sure. And then when there is no war, when, you know, when it comes to art, it's a real period of awakening and a lot of producing of new things.
Right. Because there's more like psychic space, I feel. You know, I feel like when I was reading about this earthquake, it's just like reminding me of what I feel so much even about these times we're in. It's like we're so, when we're faced with how tiny we actually are and like, you know, really, you get, your whole city gets hit by an earthquake and tsunami and all these things. And you see how, like, you're just kind of flicked out of life, just snuffed immediately by the hundreds of thousands. You know, it's hard not to feel so tiny, you know, and I think that that kind of often leads to an impulse to then like control something, you know, blame something, make sense of it in our little tiny minds, like these things that we actually can't understand because they're from science. From the earth. They're too big. They're too big for us. You know, it's like they're too big for our tiny little brains to fully comprehend how we can be part of this huge you know, tragedy of history.
And I think people who don't believe in God, let's say, think that that's the exact reason why people invented God, right? Which is that there are things on that happen that are inexplainable, not understandable, that are so massive and make us, again, like Jacqueline's saying, so feel so small and meaningless that, you know, they strive to kind of create a story where they actually do have some meaning and control. Okay, if we live a certain way, if we behave a certain way, then we will be taken care of by a greater power.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to put this up, but I do want to discuss, I don't know how else to phrase this, but I do want to discuss the Koreans and what happened afterward, after the earthquake. We're obviously not putting the Koreans up on the board, but I just want to discuss. Michael Allen said the price of in The Price of Identity, the 1920 through Kanto earthquake and its aftermath, said in the immediate aftermath of the devastating earthquake, hundreds, perhaps thousands of Korean residents in Japan were massacred. Nearly every imaginable kind of rumor spread, many of them concerning fire and suggesting arson. A good number of them implicated Koreans. Rumors reported included widespread arson by Koreans, personal attacks by unruly Koreans, robbery by Koreans, Koreans organizing into large groups to prepare for attacks on Japanese residents, murders committed by Koreans, Koreans poisoning wells, Koreans with bombs and poison, Korean criminals carrying money provided by socialists, Koreans masquerading as policemen. So these were all the rumors that were going around. In addition to providing an outlet for the expression of generalized fear or hatred of Koreans, the chaos after the earthquake also provided an opportunity for government violence against leftists and subversives in general. Mai Denawa from Brown University said, psychiatrists have suggested that the minority Koreans became the target for feelings of anger the Japanese felt against the injustice of fate and being victims of the earthquake and fires. It feels to me like they're doing a lot of projecting of their own feelings onto and frustrations onto a marginalized group. Classic.
Right. Yeah. Bully. It
speaks to like just like what we've been talking about too. Like we can't, how easy to just scapegoat, you know, default to a racist or bigoted idea that you have. Like it's their fault instead of just dealing with the magnitude of an actual earthquake. You know?
And yourself and what that means for you and your family and your future, right? It's like instead of reflecting inward, you don't want to think.
Mm-hmm. Koreans at the time also were sort of a new Japan in 1910 annexed Korea.
Right.
And so they I guess were a part of this. I guess they were basically new immigrants if you think about them that way. and or just like a fresh new addition to the growing empire of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this sort of fear of the other, you know, sort of takes over. They're, you know, they're new to us. And I think that there was like a cultural kind of fear there of the Korean people.
I mean, we've seen it here with the, you know, that racist mentality of like the immigrants are going to take our mm-hmm. jobs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We see it in the, you hear it.
Yeah. It sounds a lot like what's going on in Russia and Ukraine right, right now mm-hmm. too. Like, you know, because it was like they had occupied Korea and then, you know, they annexed them. But then it was like, we still want Korea. We still want control over them. And like, we're not really recognizing them as their own country people. And then this happens and it gave them like a really, gave the politicians and powers that be like a really good opportunity to start spreading all this propaganda and take it out on these people that they didn't really want to be free. They didn't want to be part of their country. They wanted control over them.
You know, it's hard to be an immigrant. And it's hard to be an immigrant at the moment that you're being an immigrant, if that makes sense. Because like, and not just because you've fled your own country, left everything behind, perhaps your family, everything is new, you don't know the language. That's just like on one level, right? But it's also mm-hmm. wherever you're going, it's if you are a part of an immigrant community, the feelings of the people towards you are also very strong and usually mm-hmm. negative. Mm. And with time, of course, hopefully that starts to people are more welcoming and more understanding. But at least in America, like you've heard it also, like the Irish and Italian when they came to, you know, went to America and they were not wanted. It takes time, I guess.
Well, it's just the temporary nature of it's like a result of this sort of temporary transient kind of nature of how geopolitical whatever works. I mean, you give it 100 years and the Italians are now. They're now, I guess.
Now they don't want other people.
Part
to come
of the majority,
in.
And now they totally don't want forgot. Other people. They totally forget.
Yeah, now it's like we don't want these Central Americans. They're not like us.
Is there a way to like put on the board something that's like? Because mm-hmm. I feel like it's like the hubris, like the fact that like Japan was in power and was like kind of becoming. It became a superpower after World War One and like had control over Korea and kind of annexed them. But like, it's like that isolationism, that feeling in America too, where it's like when the country's doing well, you don't want an influx of immigrants because it feels like, this like false sense of they're bringing it down. And I feel like that sounds like somewhat of this, that they're like, we're doing so well, you know, and it's these people. Yeah. These infiltrators right. that we need to turn on. And it's like a sense of like their own, like abusing their own power or wanting to stay powerful or like the hubris of
it. There's something too that just sort of made me think of what we were talking about before, which is like something cataclysmic like this happens. You feel so small. You feel so powerless. You know, I think that is, you know, these shifts in population and immigrant influxes, these make people feel powerless too. Like, what's happening? I have no control over the situation. And so instead mm-hmm. of one direction, you know, you go the other direction, fear and hate, right?
Mm-hmm. You see, these are, you just made me think, Chris, these are social and cultural earthquakes we have of our own.
Mm. Wow. So is that what we want to call what? Yeah. Let's put
the
a couple
social,
of these terms
the,
on the board.
Social earthquake or the cultural earthquake?
The
human earthquakes.
You know, it's interesting because
we've got literal earthquakes and societal, you know.
We could do
psychic earthquakes.
We could do, you know, Mother Nature, which I think should be on the board.
Sure, let's put her up.
And human nature.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, that tectonic plate started in the Philippines. So maybe the Philippines is on the board.
At least their plates are, you know.
The Philippines sent that earthquake.
Tectonics
like,
on there, too.
Shake up
we
this
have
plate.
To talk about the literal things that happened as well and mm-hmm. put those up on the board. Like fire. So let's put fires up on the board. The earthquake destroyed many of the gas mains in Tokyo and Yokohama. The leaking gas ignited, causing massive fires. Nearly two-thirds of all houses in both cities burned down. In interviews conducted in 1990, nearly 70 years later, Osamu Hiroi, a renowned researcher of Japanese earthquakes, survivors shared the destruction and trauma experienced as a firestorm caused mass casualties in what was a defunct army clothing depot located in Tokyo's Honjo district. Nearly 44,030 Tokyo area refugees died when fires quickly swept through as carts of people's possessions caught fire, trapping those inside, many of whom burned to death. Survivor Kawataki Shigetoshi said, "I was speechless watching the whirlpools of fire and the undulating waves of flame. It was utterly beyond description." And I was looking up what a fire tornado is, because everyone keeps talking about what that is. And it's a whirlwind induced by fire containing a vortex that sucks in debris and gases. Eyewitnesses called this a dragon twister, or they've also called it hell on earth. The gigantic fire. Yeah. So that was more just literal. Like, yeah.
I get like such a feeling of doom in department stores to begin with. And so I just feel, this feels like when I read this, I was like, right, yes, this is what happens. This is what happens when you pile into a department store. Like, this is what's going to happen to all of us.
I know.
Trapped in hell.
Out of Macy's. Get out of Macy's. You know,
it says the fire killed, at least 38,000 people in 15 minutes.
That's terrifying.
Oy. 15 minutes is too long.
Well, yeah,
too
but
long.
That amount of
you're in there for 15 minutes.
I know.
Oh, wipe out.
It's unthinkable.
In 15 minutes.
God. Oh my God.
So wind. So do we put wind up there then?
Wind.
Yes.
Or tornadoes.
Wind. We'll put the wind. Yeah.
That evil
dragon twister. We'll call it a fire.
In the information you sent out about the fires, regarding the fires, it sounded like from the information that, you know, the cooking stoves turned over like everywhere because it was midday. And so I feel like lunch.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I have that on my list.
if it wasn't midday, I don't think those cooking fire, like the cooking.
True.
You're absolutely right. Let's put lunch up on the board. And this is according to historyofyesterday.com. What made the earthquake much worse was the time it occurred at. If the earthquake had happened at night when most of the residents were asleep, it wouldn't have been as bad. Mm. However, it happened at one of the worst possible hours during the day when lots of people were cooking. Most locals used real fire and lived in wooden houses. Electric stovetops and brick houses weren't ubiquitous back then yet. So open flames, cooking in an open flame near a house.
I've always been a fan of electric stoves. I'm not gonna lie, I just think we're going there. That's the future. The future is electricity. It's electric stoves. But you know, that's, you know, at the time you're not gonna have that.
Yeah, you didn't have that.
Nope.
So
I've been a fan of the lunch sandwich.
Just a sandwich.
Like no cooking. Don't cook at lunchtime. Like, make yourself a bologna sandwich.
Yes, you I'm also a fan of the DoorDash. Magically appears.
How come they didn't use DoorDash? If they just used DoorDash in 1923.
Let's put lunch. That would be sad
lunch
if that got
there?
Sent to jail, but we have to. Wind. Again,
wind, fire, wind. Tornadoes. I got those up.
Yes.
There.
Okay. Because wind was a big part of it. And tsunami. This is according to thoughtco.com. The offshore earthquake triggered a tsunami in the bay, which struck the island of Oshima at a height of 39 feet and hit the Izu and Bosu peninsulas with 20-foot waves. The north shore of Sagami Bay rose permanently by almost 6 feet, and parts of the Bosu Peninsula moved 15 feet laterally. Japan's ancient city at Kamakura, almost 40 miles from the epicenter, was inundated by a 20-foot wave that killed 300 people.
Everything horrible happened. Like, if you were writing a movie and you were like, there's going to be a massive earthquake, followed by a tsunami, followed by a bridge collapse, followed by a dragon cyclone, followed by fire, like followed by like the, this, like you'd be like, no, like no one's going to believe that is too much, like too much.
Calm down, Michael
Bay. Just let them have an earthquake.
Right. That's what they would say.
Right. Right. It's horrible. My God.
So much. And yeah, go on, Chris.
No, I was just going to. Uh-huh. Just take another moment to say how incomprehensible this all is. And looking at some of the photos and it's brutal.
I want to ask a clarifying question.
Yes.
So when we're talking about who's to blame, are we talking about like, or what is to blame for the like catastrophic death or for the earthquake itself?
Oh, good question. I mean, we know what's to blame for the earthquake, but I think it's the the catastrophic death, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Because, I mean, yeah, I feel like we're circling on like kind of different, we're talking about obviously like the event itself, but there are, I feel like there's different contributing factors that increase the death toll, which I think might be
big
what
time.
We're maybe more... the more interesting thing to decide.
Yeah.
Added to the tragedy, you know?
Well, I think we're good with things up on the...
So lunch. Yeah. I think it's lunch.
Let's take lunch. Let's take a lunch break.
Let's take a lunch break and then we'll come back and start knocking things off the board.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I wonder if, like, I mean, this I think maybe speaks only to what the Japanese then did to the Koreans, but like, I wonder if World War One is a contributing factor, like if that should be on the board, like in some ways that they're just like in a fighting spirit, you know, that like, I feel I can't, you know, I don't think that's why it's like a world war, you know, it's like for the first time, all these different countries got together and took sides and, you know, and so they had like national pride and like me versus you, my group versus your group. And they were like in a fighting spirit. And I feel I just wonder if there was still like the residual effect of that to be like, yeah.
I mean, I
turn against.
I'm with you. I think last minute plea by Jacqueline to add World War One up on the list, and okay. I think we should do it. Yeah,
war. What is it good for?
Chris, absolutely hit us with the list.
Who is to blame for the great Kanto earthquake? Is it God, capitalism, consumerism, Mother Nature, human nature, plate tectonics, fire, wind/fire tornadoes, lunchtime, the tsunami, or World War One? Wow.
Off the bat, since we clarified, I think we can take plate tectonics out because we know that literally caused it, but...
Yep. They just, not the plate's fault. They're just spinning. Mm-hmm. Spinning
exactly.
Slipped. A plate slipped. Slipped a disc.
And you know what you use literal plates for? Lunch.
That's true.
Lunchtime.
Not me. I eat my lunch.
So it's
over
already
the sink,
assumed.
Okay.
For safety. That's why he does that.
Sandwiches over the sink.
He avoids all kinds of plates.
What? Can we specify what we mean particularly by human nature? Like, what about human?
Perhaps
to me,
the human earthquake.
Human earthquake nature.
That was going back to kind of the ugly side of human nature that came out once the tragedy happened. And
right,
they
like,
started retaliating against like Koreans because they couldn't, you know, deal with their own anger or shock from the event.
Yeah. Right. Sure. So, I mean, Mother Nature, okay, God, I don't believe capitalism did it. Not this one. Right? Or, I don't know if you can say like, God, really. This feels more made, right?
If we say God, we're a little, you know, as like liberal artists in Los Angeles, we're a little implicit. Like if God, you know, spiked them down because
I just don't believe it.
They were liberal and having a party. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they were all partying all the time.
I don't think it was God. I don't think it was God.
So
I
we should take
were.
God off the
yes.
board. We're thinking.
People, I also think people. Capitalism really, because that goes with the thought that you know that was the reason that they
that I don't
this
know
happened
how you get
to them
to
or consumerism as well. We can take that off the board. Mother Nature got to stay.
I mean,
there.
In this case, I just feel like Mother was very having a horrible day, like just really having a tough day. Like really, Mother wanted to take it out.
Yeah, but at the same time, Chris, maybe you can look this up, but Japan is known for earthquakes. So
yes,
it's.
Oh yeah, we didn't put the Ring of Fire. That's the sort of plate.
Right.
Thing.
Earthquakes and tsunamis, because the tsunami usually follow. And I feel like there's a lot of like spirit. Even after the tsunami that happened, there was an earthquake and tsunami back in like the early 2008 or something, and then it wiped out that. Nuclear plant. Even then, there's so much talk about like, what can we learn from this? Like, what? Why is this happening to us? Like, that's a big part of their cultural awareness. There,
yeah,
experience.
And
I
just don't think that you know. That's why the God thing doesn't work for me, because if we were all on the Ring of Fire, if all of Earth was a Ring of Fire, right? Then it would be more like.
Johnny Cash.
It would be more like, okay, well, you specifically now, you've been behaving poorly and, you know. But right. it's just that's where Japan is, where it sits. And so it has nothing to do with God. Just location, location, location.
No. Location. I
mean, there might not even be a God, so.
Should we have put location, location, location? I'm pretty sure we put that up at some point before.
Do you want that, or do you want the Ring of Fire? Which one
I think
would you prefer?
Location, location, location.
Okay.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have bought that property. let's take. I think we can take lunchtime off.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Right.
I did think it contributed to a lot of deaths.
Yes.
Excess.
Agree, but I think the fire
again, though,
was
that
more.
Goes,
fine.
That goes back to location, 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 because at lunchtime you're in a certain location, and if it wasn't lunchtime, you'd be in a different location.
Yeah.
That's right. And timing.
And I think that it was more fire than the tsunamis that really caused the massive casualties. I'm not saying either are good. You know what I mean?
All right. I mean, like, can you blame anything for that for those fires? I mean, how do you build a city? I mean, my mind goes to, you know, city design, right? And but how do you build? I mean, you know, right. We kind of saw this.
That was technology back then. Like, we just didn't have it. It was cheaper, you know, like more flimsy construction. Like, that stuff is bound. I feel like every time something massive happens, we learn and we have to build it in a different way because it won't withstand certain. Right. You know.
Well, this earthquake is credited with you know, a whole earthquake preparedness kind of
this.
Right.
It revolution. Changed the name.
It sort of shifted.
Changed the game.
Yeah, changed the game in that in terms of that. So
that, I mean, that is something good that came out of it, if you can find the silver lining.
I mean, I still don't know my boyfriend's phone number.
No, so let's talk about it. What's his number? Let's tell everyone so everyone knows.
Everyone should learn your boyfriend's number.
Grab a pen and paper.
555.
Write down Jacqueline's number.
Yeah, call Jason. Yeah,
honestly, a great person to call if you're in need.
Right, he'd be really good.
His phone would blow up. He'd be like, who are all these people?
If only we could get a hold of him.
He's like, Jacqueline, my phone's blowing up right now.
Blowing up.
So we're going to take fire and wind and fire tornadoes
I
off,
do.
Correct?
I end the tsunami as well. I don't think we can blame World War I either.
No.
Right?
No. For the fire? I didn't direct.
Here's
the
what I
the
think,
fire,
guys. No. I think we send location, location, location to the alarmist jail and slap the human earthquake. The earthquake of humanity that happened after the literal earthquake. What do we think? Let's let that simmer. Are we going to send location, location, location?
I like giving the human nature or human earthquake a slap because I do feel like it's unfortunate that happened, and I feel like they deserve some kind of punishment.
They deserve a slap.
I think I want to call location. The earthquake of humanity.
Mother.
Mm. Okay.
I want to take Mother to task, too. It's tough. I mean,
so you want to send Mother to the alarmist jail?
Well, I think, it's like Mother or location. Is Mother whipped up havoc on the location.
But she constantly does because of where it is.
Right.
That's the thing. It's not personal.
But this
it's not personal.
Ever, right?
It just makes me think when I think about location, 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 it makes me think about how and why Japan emerged as a power, especially on this island or this you know, thousands of islands, and it just makes me just more curious about their culture. I mean, they must be a very resilient
clearly
country and history, and it just makes me more curious about them. I mean, because they're operating at a disadvantage, right?
Right.
I mean, if you think about it, being on the Ring of Fire, it's like playing the video game of life on extremely difficult as opposed to, you know, easy or medium or whatever. So it just sort of, I don't know, it makes me sort of have a new appreciation and curiosity about this, the history of this country and these people.
Absolutely.
We need to learn more. We need to dive in.
I will say, I also think location, location is like kind of bringing together, like, I think the reason that they became part of the superpower after the war was, but like during the war, they had jurisdiction over the seas, like over the Western seas, you know, because that's where they were. And they had the military to do it. So
we're going to send Japan's location, location, location to the alarmist jail. All right, I'm going to call it. And hopefully we're going to talk to an expert and we'll see what they think. The earthquake of humanity. You're getting the big slap. Japan's location, location, location. You're going to the alarmist jail.
Get it.
So much... just so much I keep thinking of just all the casualties and the destruction of this terrible tragedy and what that must have felt like in the aftermath for those survivors. How incomprehensible. And like, I just can't imagine everything around you. It's not just your house and your home, and but there's death and destruction all around. How do you come out of that?
You know, this is what this brings me back to, because I feel like we all, especially living here in LA, have these moments where you are driving under a bridge or you're like, oh God, it could happen now. And it brings us back to, I feel like, the conversation we've had many times about preparedness and maintenance.
Yes.
How do we, you know, like these things are going to happen. So what can we be doing as a society to our infrastructure to not only maintain, but, you know, retrofit and prepare for these things that will absolutely happen. So that when we, when it does happen and it is terrible, we can at least like have some of our wits about us and not start scapegoating and doing the crazy things that people do when they're unprepared and shocked.
That's a really important point, Clayton. When, if and when it happens, let us think about this and remember that it's happened before, and let's not make the same mistakes people have done in the past. Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you. It was totally terrifying.
We couldn't have done it without you. So thanks for helping us figure out who was to blame for this catastrophic earthquake.
Now go learn your boyfriend's number as soon as you get off of this podcast.
Okay. We'll all learn it.
Yeah, 911 Jason's number. That's what we need.
And how to get to the Rose Bowl.
That's right.
Make your plans, everyone. Don't sleep on those plans. After the earthquake, the reconstruction of Tokyo following the Great Kanto earthquake began almost immediately, with former Tokyo mayor and appointed home minister, Goto Shimpei, who called the disaster the perfect opportunity to construct an ideal capital. Beginning in 1960, September 1st was designated as Disaster Prevention Day in Japan as a way to commemorate those lost during the earthquake and to remind people of the importance of preparedness. Since 1923, and to this day, information about the Kanto massacres has been largely suppressed and in some cases outright denied in Japan. Visit our website and let us know who you think is to blame at www.thealarmistpodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram at The Alarmist Podcast and on Twitter at Alarmist The. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early, with fact-checking by Chris Smith and editing by Molly Hockey. Additional writing by Anastasia Kousakis. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Alex Paul. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith and the Erios Network. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing Cinco de Mayo.
Erios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.